Chapter 1. Zero Hour. Remembrance of Wolves. Onslaught. Terra. On the first of Primus, the sirens rang across Terra. On the myriad worlds conquered and ruled by the Imperium of Man, they talked of year divisions, of time sliced into 1,000 equal slivers, first division, second division, third, and so on, without variation or character, until the weight of counting reached 1,000, and 1 year tipped over into the next. On worlds of endless night or blinding days, a year was the same. In an empire spanning a galaxy, anything else would have been meaningless. 0000014.M31 was how surviving records would mark the first moment of that day, stamped and corrected for temporal accuracy, standardized and stripped of any meaning. But here, on the world whose night and day and seasons had given mankind its concept of time, the old counting still meant something, and so did the moment that 1 year died and another was born. The feast of two faces, the day of new light, the renewal, on and on went its names. But for longer than memory, it had been the first of Primus, firstborn of the 365 days that would follow. A day of hope and new beginnings. The turning of that year began with snow on the northern battlements of the Imperial Palace, where three brother demigods watched the night skies above. It began with the dawn light and icy chill reaching into a tower-top chamber and stirring the painted cards dealt by a man who was older than any knew. It began with the sirens calling out, one at first, high on the palace spires, before the cry was picked up by others, on and on across the turning globe. The sound echoed through the mountain-sized spaceports and rasped from voxhorns in the deep strata of the Atlantean hives. On and on it went, stilling the hands of people as they ate and worked. They looked up. In caves beneath the earth and hive vaults and under the smog drifts, they looked up. Of those that could see the sky, a few thought they could make out new stars amongst the firmament and froze at the promise of each pinprick of light. A promise of fire and ash and an age of loss. And with the sound of sirens, fear spread, unnamed but still spoken. "He is here," they said. Prison ship Acus, Uranus, high orbit.
"I understand you have a story," she said.
The wolf stood before her, the fur of its back silver beneath the moonlight.
"A particularly entertaining one. I'd like to remember it for posterity."
The wolf turned, its teeth a smile of sorrow.
"Which story?"
"Horus killing the Emperor."
Mercedes Oliton woke from the memory dream with sweat on her face. She breathed and pulled the blanket over her from where it had slipped onto the floor. The air was cool and dank in the cell, scented with the tang of air that had been exhaled too much. She blinked for a second. Something was different. She reached out a hand and touched the metal wall. Moisture clung to the rivets and rust scabs. The thrum of the ship's engines had gone. Wherever they were stationary in the void. She let her hand drop and let out a breath. The tatters of the memory dream still clung to her eyelids. She focused, trying to pull back the threads of the dream, even as they slid into darkness.
"I must remember," she said to herself.
"The prisoner will stand and face the wall,"
the voice boomed out of the speaker set above the cell door. She stood instinctively. She wore a grey jumpsuit, worn and faded. She put her hands on the wall, fingers splayed. The door unlocked with a clang, and footsteps sounded on the grated floor. The guard would be one just like the rest, crimson-clad and silver-masked, the humanity in its voice concealed by vox distortion. All the jailers were the same, as constant as the ticking of a clock that never struck the hour. Small spaces, locked doors, questions and suspicions. Such had been her world for the 7 years since she had come back to the solar system. That was the price for what she had seen, for what she remembered. She had been a remembrancer, one of the thousands of artists, writers and scholars sent out to witness the Great Crusade as it brought the light of reason to a reunited humanity. That had been her purpose, to see, to remember. Like many clear purposes and shining futures, it had not worked out that way. She heard the footsteps stop behind her, and knew the guard would be placing a bowl of water and a fresh jumpsuit on the floor.
"Where are we?"
she asked, hearing the question come from her mouth before she could stop it. Silence. She waited. There would not be a punishment for her asking. No beatings, no withdrawal of food or humiliation. That was not how this imprisonment worked. The punishment was silence. She had no doubt that other, more visceral methods were used on other prisoners. She had heard the screams. But for her, there had only been silence. 7 years of silence. They did not need to ask her questions, after all. They had taken the memory spools out of her skull, and those recordings would have told them everything they wanted, and more.
"We are still in the void, aren't we?"
she said, still facing the wall.
"The engine vibrations have stopped, you see. No way of missing it if you have spent any time on ships. I spent time on a warship once. You never lose the sense of it."
She paused, waiting for a response, even if it was just the sound of retreating footsteps and the door shutting. Silence again. That was strange. She had tried talking to guards in the early years, and their response had been to leave her without reply. After a while, that had felt worse than if they had struck a whip across her back. They had never beaten her, though, or even touched her. Even when they opened her skull to remove the memory spools, they had sedated her, as though that made the violation that followed more acceptable. She supposed that such small mercies had to do with crews or locum. The former lunar wolves had watched over her as much as they could, but that had still left her a prisoner of the greatest and darkest prison in the Imperium. Loken had said that he would free her, but she had refused. Even while it pained her, she understood why she had to remain locked up. How could she not? After all, had she not seen the true face of the enemy? 4 years of life on the vengeful spirit amongst the sons of Horus, in the shadow of their father, who now had set the galaxy alight with civil war. What other reward could there be for remembering those days? A galaxy shrunk to silence and plasteel walls, with only dreams and memories to speak to her. She had begun to dream memories after a few months, dreams of her home on Terra, of the sunlight shattering across the edge of the Arcus orbital plate, her mother laughing and calling after her as she ran through the hydro gardens. And she had dreamed of her time amongst the lunar wolves and the sons of Horus, of people now long dead. She had asked for parchment and pen, but none had been given to her. She had gone back to the old games her mind nurse had taught her, ways of tucking memories away when she woke from sleep, ways of remembering the past even as it fled into the distance. In the silence, she had found that memories and dreams were all she had, all she was.
"Are we still somewhere in the solar system?"
she asked, and twitched her neck to look behind her. Why was she still talking? But then why had the guard not left?
"The ship doesn't feel like it's preparing for translation. Where are we?"
They had come for her in her cell on the Nameless Fortress 3 nights ago. They had loaded her into a box barely big enough to stand upright in. She had felt the box judder and sway as machines had lifted it and her. They had let her out into this cell, and she had recognised the vibration of a void ship under power. It had been comforting at first, But her dreams had not been. And now the silence of this moment was feeling stranger with each elongating second.
"Why was I taken away from the fortress?" she asked. "Where am I going?"
"Where we all wish we could go, Mistress Ollerton," said Garfield Loken.
She whirled, and the end of her cell was gone, and a wolf was rising from a pool of dark water beneath the moon. Its eyes were black spheres, and its bared teeth grin was wide as it spoke.
"You're going home."
In the dark of her cell, Mercedes Ollerton woke to silence and lay still, waiting for the dream to fade or for herself to wake again. Strike Frigate Lacrimae, Trans-Plutonian Gulf. The first ship of the onslaught died as it breached the veil of reality. Streams of plasma reached out from gun platforms. White fire smashed into the ship's prow. Lightning and glowing ectoplasm streamed behind its hull. Macro shells detonated amongst the molten wounds already cut into its skin. Turrets and spires sheared from its bulk. Towers broke from its spine. It kept coming, even as its bows were torn apart. The burning wreck struck the first of the mines scattered across the dark. Explosions burst around it. The front portion of the ship sheared from the back. Prow and gun decks hinged down. Atmosphere vented from the exposed interior. Debris scattered, burning for an eye blink before the flames ate the air trapped in the wreckage.
"Ship kill," called a sensor adept from across the bridge of the Lacrimae.
Sigismund watched the intruder's death as it spread across the picked screens above the command dais. He was armoured, his sword chained to his wrist and resting point down on the deck at his feet. He did not blink or move as the dying ship tumbled across his sight. In the still depths of his mind, he heard the words that had brought him to this place and time.
"You must choose where to stand, by the words of your duty, or by your father's side at the end."
Around him, the command crew was silent, eyes fixed on instruments and screens. This was the beginning of the moment they had all known would end the years of waiting. Some, perhaps, had thought or hoped that it would never come. But here it was, marked with fire.
"I chose Keeler," he thought.
And in his mind he heard again the words that Dawn had spoken in judgment of that choice.
"You will continue in rank and position as you have, and you will never speak to any other of this. The Legion and the Imperium will not know of my judgment. Your duty will be to never let your weakness taint those who have more strength and honour than you."
"As you will, Father."
"I am not your father," roared Dawn,
his anger suddenly filling the air, his face swallowed by dusk shadows.
"You are not my son," he said quietly. "And no matter what your future holds, you never will be." "I chose," he whispered to himself. "And here I stand at the end."
The fire from the dead warship spread across the displays.
"If they come at us like this, the slaughter will barely be worth the sweat," growled Fafnir Ran.
"They will not give us that luxury,"
replied Boreas from further back on the platform. Sigismund did not look around at where the holoprojections of the assault captain or his lieutenant hovered at his shoulders. Each of them stood on the command deck of one of the Lacrimae's sister ships. Ran wore void-hardened Mark III armour, with reinforcing studs bonded to his shins and left shoulder. The scars of battle fought here, at the edge of the system, ran beneath the fresh yellow lacquer. His tall boarding shield hung in his right hand. The twin axes maglocked to its back echoed in the heraldry painted on the shield's face. Sigismund imagined he could see the warped smile on Ran's face as he turned to Boreas and shrugged. The hollow image of the first lieutenant of the Templars did not move. Unhelmed, his face was a single twisted scar. And if there was any emotion beyond cold fury behind his eyes, Sigismund could not see it. Boreas's sword of office stood almost as tall as he did, its guard the cross of the Templars, its blade etched with the names of the dead.
"All ships stand by," said Sigismund softly,
and heard the orders ripple out. The vibration in the deck rose in pitch. The dull ache that had been building in his skull for the last hours was sharpening. He noticed one of the human deck crew shiver and wipe a hand across a bead of blood forming in her nose.
"Hold to our oaths and the strength of our purpose," he called.
Whispers buzzed at the edge of his thoughts, razor tips scratching over metal. They had needed to sedate every astropath in the fleet 2 hours before, as a wave of psychic pressure had sent them babbling and screaming. It had become more intense with every passing moment, and it presaged one thing. It was the bow wave of a truly vast armada coming through the warp, bearing down on the solar system like a storm front. Horus and the traitors were coming.
"Etheric surge detected,"
shouted a sensor officer.
"Here it comes," said Ran,
and brought his fist to his chest.
"Honor and death!"
"For the Primarch and Terror,"
said Boreas.
"For our oaths," said Sigismund.
The images of his two brothers blinked out. He reached down and pulled his own helm from his belt and locked it in place over his head.
"May my strength be equal to this moment,"
he said to himself as the helm display lit in his eyes. The data of the battlesphere overlaid his sight. The Plutonian Gulf glittered with weapon platforms, torpedo shawls, and mine drifts. Together they formed a great web, tens of thousands of kilometers deep, stretching from the very edge of night to the orbits of Pluto itself. Ships glinted amongst the defenses, fast gun sloops and monitor ships that were little more than engines and weaponry. They had been built in the orbital forges of Luna, Jupiter, and Uranus, and dragged to the edge of the sun's light. Alongside them lay the fleet of the first sphere, hundreds of warships, all in motion, and beyond the warships, the moons of Pluto waited. Studded with weapons and hollow with tunnels, each was a fortress that could have stood against a fleet. The sheet of stars erupted with lightning. Rents opened in the vacuum. Nauseating colours and dazzling light poured out as ship after ship surged from nothing into being. Tens, and then hundreds. The sensor servitors in the Lacrimae twitched and gabbled as targets multiplied faster than they could vocalise updates. Mines detonated, explosions leaping from one to another in chains that stretched across the dark. Gun platforms opened up. Macro shells, rockets, and plasma struck metal and stone, bored in and exploded. Ships died even as they tasted reality. Armour stripped by fire. Guts spilled into the dark. In the first 10 seconds, over 100 vessels burned to wreckage. Most had been former warships of the Imperial Army, crewed by humans who had given their oath to Horus and been rewarded with the honour of being the first to draw their blades in this battle. They died for that honour, burning too in the ruin of their ships, hulls shredded around them. But they kept coming. Ship after ship, tearing reality like flags waving in front of a gun line. The first Legionis Astartes warship surfaced from the warp. It was named the Erinyes, and it was a bombardment galleon of the 4th Legion, a 5-kilometer-long hull wrapped around a trio of Nova cannon barrels. She loosed all 3 shots as the void kissed her skin. Each Nova cannon shell was the size of a battle titan, its core filled with unstable plasma. They had no target, but they needed none. They ran straight into the heart of the defences and exploded with the force and light of a star's birth. Gun platforms vanished, mines lit off in spheres of red flame. Fire poured from the defences as more ships rammed past the debris of their dead kin. The light of the blaze flooded through the Lacrimae's screens and viewports. Sigismund's helm display dimmed.
"Engage,"
he said, and the Lacrimae leapt forwards. 20 strike cruisers and fast destroyers followed in tight formation. Lance fire speared out from them, slicing into ships as they cut across the front of the enemy fleet. Plumes of ghost light and ectoplasm stretched like arms through the dark as more ships punched through from the warp. A backwash of etheric lightning struck the Imperial Fist's cruiser Solar Sun. It spun, its hull cracking and crumpling as the laws of reality went into flux. The Lacrimae and its sisters did not pause, but plunged on. They had one purpose in this moment, to kill as many of the enemy as possible while they clawed from the warp onto the shore of reality. For the moment, the Imperial Fist's prey was vulnerable, and the First Sphere fleet were predators. The Lacrimae's guns found the skin of the gun barge Fire Oath before it could light its void shields. Macro shells punched through gun decks and exploded. Munitions cooked off in loading hoists. The Fire Oath's hull bulged, then burst. Building-sized pieces of hulls scythed out, caught the flank of a battlecruiser as it emerged from the warp and tore its command castle from its back. The warp breach it had emerged from pulsed and swallowed the wreckage.
"Hold!"
called Sigismund, his voice passing through the ships of his command via crackling voxlink.
"For our oaths we hold true!"
The Lacrimae sliced on while its mortal crew screamed as ghosts and nightmares flooded their sight. Reality in the battlesphere was now little more than tattered scraps blowing in the night. The Lacrimae rolled, her guns finding enemy after enemy, but for each one that died, another three came from the warp. Deadfall torpedoes set in the void triggered and speared forwards. Carcasses of ships split and burned. Pluto's fortress moons found their range to the first of the invaders and spoke. Newly lit void shields flashed as they collapsed. Volleys answered. The reserve fleets, holding close to the moons, powered forwards and began to kill and die. The light of battle swirled, blurring with the glow of thousands of warp transitions, until which side was firing and which was burning was lost in a rippling blaze tens of thousands of kilometers across. Hours later, the light of that fire would glimmer in the night above the battlements of the Imperial Palace, as the sirens called and alarums rang to tell that Horus had, at last, brought his war to the birth system of humanity.